All right, Wednesday morning Bible study on the book of Acts, written by St. Luke, of course. Last week we did chapter 6, all of it. It's a fairly short chapter. Today we're going to get started on the first half of chapter 7. So if you remember in chapter 6, it started out with the Greek-speaking Christians in the new church were complaining. They're called Hellenists because they speak Greek. They were complaining because their widows were being neglected. Well, that's a big deal because widows were one of the groups of people that are vulnerable. Children would be the most vulnerable, and then widows would be next. So they were complaining, and as is appropriate, whenever this happens in an institution or a group or the church, if somebody says, well, what about this? Well, what about that? What is the answer? Would you be willing to take care of it? So they chose 7 men to address the situation. All 7 have Greek names. So then these 7 men were put in charge of the daily distribution, making sure that everyone who was in need had food for the day. And they would do that every day. All right, so that happened. And then you'll remember there was a little bit of a discussion we had about were these 7 men ordained. We had that debate or discussion in a seminary class that I was in. Because what did the apostles do? They laid on their hands and prayed over them. So were they ordained or not? Were these part of the clergy, part of the pastoral office? Well, most of us would say yes. I would say yes, they were ordained. And part of the reason that I would say that, this would be the first extension of the pastoral office after the apostles. So it's the first group that are added. Part of the reason I would say that they were ordained is because what happens at the end of chapter 6? Stephen is preaching and performing healing miracles, signs and wonders. So that kind of indicates he's doing the same thing as the apostles. He was ordained in this part of the pastoral office. And that's where chapter 6 ends. Let me go back to chapter 6 because there's the beginning of the setup for chapter 7. So back in chapter 6, right at the end, Stephen is preaching and doing signs and wonders, miracles, and they arrest him. So if you look at verse 12 in chapter 6, I'm just going to briefly look at the last few verses here because it gets us into chapter 7. And they stirred up the people and the elders and the scribes, and they came upon him, Stephen, and seized him and brought him before the council. And they set up false witnesses who said, "This man never ceases to speak words against this holy place and the law. For we have heard him say that this Jesus of Nazareth will destroy this place and will change the customs that Moses delivered to us." Did Stephen say that?
No.
Well, probably yes, but in a different context. Because if Stephen is quoting Jesus at some point, did Jesus say, "I will destroy this temple and rebuild it in 3 days? Yeah, Jesus said that. Now, was he talking about the physical temple? No. Jesus was not talking about the temple. He was talking about his body. So if Stephen is quoting Jesus, they did hear him say, Stephen say, that Jesus is going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. But it's a different context, and it's pointing to something different. Also, would Stephen have been recounting that Jesus was the final sacrifice? Yeah, that's part of the gospel message.
Sure.
So Jesus is the final sacrifice. So therefore, sacrifices are no longer necessary. Oh, that's changing the customs of Moses, the laws of Moses, the sacrificial rituals. So, these false witnesses are claiming a half-truth. Stephen would have been preaching that Jesus said, "Destroy the temple and raise it in 3 days." And Jesus also would have been the end of the sacrificial rites from Moses. But it's in a different context, okay? So there is some muddy water here, all right, from these false witnesses. So these are the accusations made against Stephen. So then let's go to chapter 6, because that's where we're going to get Stephen's response. So, chapter 7, verse 1, and the high priest said, "Are these things so?" Well, first of all, I'm kind of impressed they give him a chance to respond or defend himself. They wouldn't necessarily have done that. So, are these things so? So they're opening the floor to Stephen. Now, the whole chapter nearly is Stephen's response. I'm not going to call it a lecture, I'm going to call it a sermon. Because he's preaching to them, and it's gospel. Law and gospel are in here. So I'm going to read a paragraph at a time, and then we're going to go back and look at each paragraph in a little more detail, okay? So, Stephen says, "Brothers and fathers, hear me. The God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia, before he lived in Haran, and said to him, 'Go out from your land and from your kindred, and go into the land that I will show you.' Then he went out from the land of the Chaldeans and lived in Haran. And after his father died, God removed him from there into this land in which you are now living. Yet he gave him no inheritance in it, not even a foot's length, but promised to give it to him as a possession and to his offspring after him, though he had no child. And God spoke to this effect, that his offspring would be sojourners in a land belonging to others, who would enslave them and afflict them 400 years. But I will judge the nation that they serve, said God, and after that they shall come out and worship me in this place. And he gave him the covenant of circumcision, and so Abraham became the father of Isaac, and circumcised him on the eighth day, and Isaac became the father of Jacob, and Jacob of the 12 patriarchs." So first of all, what is Stephen doing here? He's recounting some of their history, right? Now, every Jew knew this history. It was recounted during when they would celebrate Passover. They all knew it. So why is Stephen recounting this history? Well, just as a little side note, I happen to think it's very important that you have a common understanding of your history. Otherwise, you're not going to understand your present or have a common understanding of where you need to go in the future. I didn't used to think that. Back in school, I thought, oh, why do we have history class? Why do we have social studies? I didn't mind it too much. I was okay at all the subjects, but like memorizing all these dates and events and places, do we really need to know that? And then sometime after high school and after college, talking with people about things going on in the government, and somebody not understanding the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution, and I'm kind of like a little flabbergasted. I'm like, don't you understand how our country works? Where we came from? How this happened? And it came apparent that, you know, we need to have an understanding of history. That is important. The Jews had a very strong understanding of history. So on the one hand, the chief priests here got their head in their hand and they're saying, yes, Stephen, we know all of this. Why are you recounting this for us? Why are you boring us with this history? We all know this. Well, part of it is to get them on a common page. Also, you'll notice in the next like 3 or 4 paragraphs, Stephen is not recounting all of their history, but certain highlights of their history for a certain purpose. That will become clear as we go through these next couple of paragraphs, okay? What the theme is of Stephen's highlights of Israelite history, all right? So, first of all, he says, the God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia before he lived in Haran. So, if you go back and look at Genesis, Abraham and his family were living in Mesopotamia, and then God appeared to them, probably in a dream or a vision, and said, move to Haran. And so, Abraham's father moved the whole family there. That shows he came from a faithful family, a believing family. And then from there, after Abraham's father died, you can read about it in Genesis, then God appeared again to Abraham and said, go to Canaan. That's where I want you to be. Now, let me point this out, because I think this is just, again, a kind of an interesting side note. A little bit of a field trip, maybe. Prior to Abraham, prior to Moses, let me start there. God gave himself a name through the burning bush. To Moses. What was the name God gave to himself?
I am.
Or in Hebrew, Yahweh. Prior to that, how did they refer to God? From the time of Abraham to the time of Moses, they had a way that they would refer to God. They didn't have the name Yahweh yet. They referred to him as the God of our fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's how they referred to God. From the time of Abraham to the time of Moses. Okay? What about prior to Abraham? prior to Abraham, people knew of God. They hadn't been organized or formed yet into the nation of Israel that came after Jacob or Israel. So if you think of from the time of Adam till the time of Abraham, that period of history, they refer to him in this way, the God of glory. They knew he was the God. After the time of Adam and for the next number of generations, they knew God. Some of them knew God directly. Some of them kind of fell away a little bit into disbelief, or they started to think that God was irrelevant, or is God really out there? But they knew who the true God was. They had heard of the true God, the God of glory, from their ancestors, dating back to Adam. Adam spoke with God face to face, right? Moses would again speak with God face to face. So they called him the God of glory, even though some of them faded in their belief in the God of glory. And it got so bad that at the time of Noah, what did God decide? I'm going to start over. There's so many of them that have failed to continue to believe in me or follow my ways, except for Noah and his family. But the God of glory appeared to Noah and said, build an ark. I'm going to start over. Okay? So, the God of glory, that was the, I'm going to call it the ancient name for God. Then he became known as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And then eventually he became known as Yahweh. Alright, so Abraham, many people, there were pockets of people around the world that believed in the true God. That still understood the true God. And Abraham is one of those families. Abraham's family is one of those families. So he followed God. He was faithful. He was obedient. Remember in Hebrews it says that's what made Abraham righteous. Not the actions that he did, but the fact that he believed in God and obeyed him. Okay? Alright, verse 4. Then he went out from the land of the Chaldeans and lived in Haran, and after his father died, God removed him from there into this land in which you are now living. That's Canaan. Yet he gave him no inheritance in it, not even a foot's length, but promised to give it to him as a possession and to his offspring after him, though he had no child. Back then, and I would say I think it's still true today, the greatest earthly blessings you could have from God were two. Your own land and a family. Offspring or family. Okay? Two greatest blessings you could have. Abraham at this point is living as a nomad. Right? Wandering around. Place to place. Through the land of Canaan. Has no places of his own. But God promised to give him his own place. This land that you're wandering through right now. The promised land. And God promised to give him offspring, a family, even though at that point he had no children. Remember how old he was when they had children? He was 100 and Sarah was 90. Wow. Incredible. Think of that. That's pretty incredible. God promised to give him his own land and offspring, or his own family as well. And verse 6, and God spoke to this effect, that his offspring would be sojourners in a land belonging to others, who would enslave them and afflict them for 400 years. What's that a reference to?
Egypt.
Egypt, that's right. So that they would be enslaved down in Egypt for 400 years, which is what happened. Verse 7, but I will judge the nation that they serve, said God, and after that they shall come out and worship me in this place. So he kind of completely, Stephen, skims over, ignores the history of the plagues, the Passover, the crossing of the Red Sea, the wandering in the wilderness. He skips over all that. So he jumps from Abraham being a nomad into the promised land, and then all of a sudden highlights, but then that God fulfilled his promise and brought Abraham's offspring back to the promised land. What is that showing? God's grace. And God's keeping his promises. Okay? God's grace right there. Did Abraham do anything to deserve this gift of the promised land and this gift of offspring? No. Other than he just believed God and obeyed. He had faith. That was it. He didn't really do anything to deserve this. It's pure grace from God. Keep that in mind. That's going to be a recurring theme coming up in these paragraphs, okay? All right. And as a sign of that covenant, verse 8, God gave him the covenant of circumcision. And so Abraham became the father of Isaac and circumcised him on the eighth day. The Jews still do that today. And Isaac became the father of Jacob, and Jacob of the 12 patriarchs. So right there, he's pointing to this gift of a great nation, a people that came from Abraham, Abraham's offspring, as well as the gift of the promised land. Okay? All right. Any questions or comments so far? All right. Doing okay? Am I droning you to sleep yet? No? All right. We'll get there. I'll try harder. All right. Next paragraph. And the patriarchs, jealous of Joseph, sold him into Egypt, but God was with him and rescued him out of all his afflictions and gave him favor and wisdom before Pharaoh, king of Egypt, who made him ruler over Egypt and over all his household. Now there came a famine throughout all Egypt and Canaan, and great affliction, and our fathers could find no food. But when Jacob heard that there was grain in Egypt, he sent out our fathers on their first visit. And on the second visit, Joseph made himself known to his brothers, and Joseph's family became known to Pharaoh. And Joseph sent and summoned Jacob his father and all his kindred, 75 persons in all. And Jacob went down into Egypt, and he died, he and our fathers. And they were carried back to Shechem and laid in the tomb that Abraham had bought for a sum of silver from the sons of Hamor in Shechem. So again, he's recounting their history, but not all of it. He's hitting some highlights. And so what happened? First of all, there's sin happening, isn't there? Joseph and his brothers. Were Joseph's brothers sinful?
Yes.
Oh, yes. They were jealous of Jacob, Joseph. They were jealous of Joseph. The coat of many colors, right? The Technicolor dream coat. Is that how it goes? How's the song go? I don't know. The musical? So they were jealous of him, and actually they threw him in a pit and were at first going to kill him. And then one of the brothers, was it Judah? Reuben. Said, no, let's not do that, but instead we'll sell him into slavery. So Joseph's brothers sinned. Did Jacob sin? Yeah. Why? How?
With the coat.
Showing favoritism. He shouldn't have been doing that. Showing favoritism to Joseph. Did Joseph sin? Yeah, I would say yes. What was he doing? Bragging about his dreams? He's stoking the fire. He's poking the bear. Oh, I have a dream. You guys are going to all bow down to me. Well, he shouldn't have been saying that. So there's sin abounding. And yet, what does God make happen here? What does this show? God's grace, even in the midst of sin. Because he glosses over all the events in Egypt, where Joseph interprets dreams and rises out of prison and, you know, all of that. He doesn't even recount all of that. He's pointing out how even though all of these people were sinful, Jacob, the brothers, Joseph, they're all sinful, and yet what did God do out of that sinfulness? He rescued them from a famine. He saved them from a famine. Okay? God's grace redeemed them or saved them even in the midst of their sin. So what could you say about Joseph? Joseph is foreshadowing the coming Messiah. We would say that's true. And the Jews back then, as learned as they were, they recognized that Joseph was a precursor or a foreshadowing of the coming Messiah. They knew that. So that's the part of their history that Stephen is highlighting here, that Joseph is pointing to the coming Messiah. Okay. Joseph summoned and sent and summoned Jacob, his father, and all his kindred, 75 persons in all. So here God is fulfilling his promise to Abraham. They've already grown into a clan of 75 people. Okay? How wonderful. And they're going to get bigger. And Jacob went down into Egypt, and he died, he and our fathers. And they were carried back to Shechem and laid in the tomb that Abraham had bought for a sum of silver from the sons of Hamor. So here's a little side note that came to me while preparing for this. I never thought of this before. Abraham, all of his life, was a nomad. However, he didn't yet own anything in the promised land, in Cana, except for what?
A tomb.
A burial plot. Yes, a tomb. He bought a little plot of land where he could bury his wife, and then he was buried, and then his sons were all carried back there. Their remains, their bones were carried back and buried there. He had a little slice of the promised land in the form of a burial plot or a tomb. Do you and I have a little slice of the promised land? Heaven? Do you own a little bit of the promised land? Most of us, I would say many of us, have a, if you have a burial plot, is that the gateway to the promised land, to heaven? You have a little spot on this earth that you own that will be your gateway into heaven. Wow. It's kind of similar to what's going on here. Just a little thought. Yeah, Joanne.
In that regard, my plot is in Indiana, in our hometown, mm-hmm. and it's part of what my dad had bought. And all my sisters had husbands, and they have all had their plots together. So I asked them, would you mind if I used the last remaining plot in Dad's place for myself? And they said, oh, no, no problem. Well, little did we know that that's a piece of land that you own. And they had, we had to go to a lawyer, and they had to sign papers deeding that over to me.
Yes.
Oh.
You do own a burial plot. There's a title and a deed and all of that. You're right. That's why I say I think it's a very interesting connection that the only thing Abraham owned in the promised land was a little slice of land that was his burial plot. That can be reflective of us too, that our burial is a little gateway into the promised land of heaven. Okay? Just an interesting thought. And yet, was there another hand up, another comment or question? No? Okay. A little side note there. All right. Continuing on then, next paragraph, verse 17. But as the time of the promise drew near, which promise? God's promise to give Abraham and his descendants the promised land. As the time of the promise drew near, which God had granted to Abraham, the people increased and multiplied in Egypt until there arose over Egypt another king who did not know Joseph. Let me pause there for a minute. I remember learning in world history that there was a changing of the dynasty in Egypt of the pharaohs during this point in time. It coincided with this biblical time. That the pharaohs, who were kings, and so that it would be passed down to the son, the oldest son, just like, you know, a royal lineage. And yet at some point during this 400 years, it is shown in world history that the pharaoh was defeated or deposed and replaced by a different family unit, a different clan, who became pharaoh. So, and this happens even, you know, if you think in English royalty or French royalty or other kings, you know, one line of kings would be deposed and another line of kings would take over, right? It happened in Egypt. And if you were connected with the previous line of kings or the previous dynasty, and a new dynasty takes over, what's going to happen? You're out, right? You're no longer part of the group, part of the in group. They don't even trust you. So what happens when the new pharaoh takes over? All of these descendants of Joseph, who are getting quite numerous, by the way, are turned into slaves, right? They're enslaved. So there's some world history that coincides with this right here. Another king who did not know Joseph. 19. He dealt shrewdly with our race and forced our fathers to expose their infants so that they would not be kept alive. At this time, Moses was born. And he was beautiful in God's sight. And he was brought up for 3 months in his father's house. And when he was exposed, Pharaoh's daughter adopted him and brought him up as her own son. And Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was mighty in his words and deeds. So this is another sign of what? Moses was born at a difficult time when he should have been left out and left to die, according to the new Pharaoh's command, because he was getting afraid of how numerous these Hebrews were. And yet Moses was the recipient of God's grace and redemption. God saved Moses, and not just saved him for life, but saved him by having him adopted into Pharaoh's own family. Pharaoh's daughter adopted him, and so he was raised in the royal household with all the education that came with that. That's incredible. Moses is also a precursor, a prefiguring of the coming Messiah. And the Jews knew that. Okay? So here's another highlight from Jewish history that Stephen is recounting. He's hitting the highlights of the very obvious portions of Israelite history that point to the coming Messiah. You know where eventually he's going to go. He's going to name who that Messiah is. And that's not going to make them happy. Okay? So that's where he's going. That's where we're building. You see the themes developing here. So, Pharaoh's daughter adopted him. He brought him up as her own son. Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was mighty in his words and deeds. Yes, he was. Okay, comments or questions there so far? Okay, I must be droning you to sleep. I'm successful in that. If you need more coffee, have more coffee. Yes, Linda, and then join.
Know and knew. When you say that they know, you know, about him being the coming Savior was represented, then, what did they believe that? If someone knows that then, they must have passed it on to them, so why?
Yes.
They had that doubt. That.
Yes, exactly. So, the Jews at this time, the Jewish leaders, the Sadducees, the Pharisees, etc., they knew all of this history was pointing to a coming Messiah. They knew that. So why did they not connect that to Jesus? I think it's because of their hardness of heart. Because Jesus did not comply with their expectation for what the Messiah would be. So they rejected Jesus. Which is very frustrating because Paul himself, St. Paul, says this. He weeps for his fellow countrymen because they did not recognize that Jesus was the Messiah who was predicted to come. So, you know, Paul weeps about that. That he wishes that they would believe. So, yes, there is a disconnect here. Stephen is giving them yet another outline. He's preaching the gospel to them. He's going to make that connection here at the end of this sermon that this Messiah that we all knew was coming is Jesus. And, yeah, they're going to reject it yet again, which is a problem. So
they're doing it to today.
Yeah, well, mostly. There are Jews who believe in Jesus.
Right, but on a whole.
But on a whole, most of the Jews still reject Jesus as the Messiah, which is still very sad. Yes, absolutely. Joanne and then Nemi.
If he was adopted as a baby and brought up as the Pharaoh's son, or the wife of the Pharaoh, whoever she was, when did he realize that he was an Israelite?
Good question. I don't know. He knew somewhere in there that he was an Israelite, and so adopted into Pharaoh's family.
You would have thought they would have kept that from him.
Well, they might have. Maybe they tried, and somebody else told him. I don't know. Yes, that at somewhere along the line, he became aware that he was adopted into Pharaoh's family and was an actual Israelite. Yes.
8 days.
8 days? Mm-hmm. Well, that's when he would have been circumcised.
My point exactly. The Jews weren't, the Egyptians aren't.
Well, that might be. Moses would have been circumcised, so that would have been an obvious sign to himself. It says he was exposed. That's not what that means.
Oh.
He knew himself, because he was circumcised, that he was a member of the Hebrews rather than the Egyptians. So that might be when, you know, at some point as a young man, he put two and two together and realized it. Denny?
Two things. One, I think Moses probably was still mentored by his birth mother for some period of time.
Yeah.
Before...
Right.
This is right.
You know, that's into his maybe
right.
Confirmation age or whatever.
Yeah.
And the other point that Linda was alluding to, I think the Jews at that time were looking for another Moses or another David.
Yes.
Another king that was earthly.
Yes.
Not heavenly.
Yes. Both good points. So if you remember, again, Stephen glosses over it. When Moses was exposed or abandoned, but his sister Miriam kept watch, right, and saw Pharaoh's daughter rescue him and said, oh, I know of someone, a woman who could be the nurse for this baby. Remember? So yes, Moses continued to have a relationship with his birth mother for some period of time. So yes, that point is a good one, Denny. And then the other point you made was about, what did you say?
Earthly king.
Oh, earthly king, yes. The Pharisees and Sadducees, they had an idea of an earthly Messiah, not a spiritual or heavenly one. So they're completely misunderstanding and missed the idea that Jesus was the Messiah. Yeah, Fred?
You know, we see this as cut and dry.
Right.
Obviously, because our faith leads us that direction. This turmoil is still going on in the Jewish community.
Yeah.
So they're still waiting.
Yes.
You know, and hanging out for, we see it as all the wrong reasons.
Yep.
And they don't, which is really a shame.
Yes, it is really a shame. Yeah, so this turmoil still happens today. Absolutely right. Yeah, I would say that's a cause of a lot of the turmoil in the Holy Land today, is this dispute and contention between the Jews and between the Muslims, and the Jews not understanding that the Messiah already came. Yeah, there is a lot of that still going on. All right, good discussions. Very good. So, continuing on. Oh, Arlene? Oh, sure, their tradition got in the way of it.
Yeah.
They got so embroiled in their own tradition that they lost sight of the Messiah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, verse 23. When he was 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brothers, the children of Israel. So yes, somewhere in there he knew he was one of the Israelites. Verse 24. And seeing one of them being wronged, he defended the oppressed man and avenged him by striking down the Egyptian. He supposed that his brothers would understand that God was giving them salvation by his hand, but they did not understand. And on the following day, he appeared to them as they were quarreling and tried to reconcile them, saying, "Man, you are brothers. Why do you wrong each other?" But the man who was wronging his neighbor thrust him aside, saying, "Who made you a ruler and a judge over us? Do you want to kill me as you killed the Egyptian yesterday?" At this retort, Moses fled and became an exile in the land of Midian, where he became the father of two sons. So again, this is a kind of a unique event in Israel's history, and Stephen is highlighting this again to show God's grace and salvation. So what happens here? And this is all, you can read about this in more detail back in Genesis, or Exodus, back there. So Moses, he did something wrong. Did Moses sin? Yes.
Yeah.
He was trying to defend his countrymen from an Egyptian who was persecuting him. Well, the form of defense or justice is not to become the judge and jury on your own, to kill the Egyptian. That wasn't justice in their culture, just like it's not today. He was not to become an avenger in that way. So Moses went overboard. He became too expensive. He killed the Egyptian. But then he thought his fellow countrymen would realize he's just defending them. Well, no, the fellow countrymen, they didn't see Moses as defending them. What did they do? He accused Moses of, you think you're higher and mightier than us. You grew up in Pharaoh's house. You think you're judge and jury over us? You're going to kill me like you killed that Egyptian? Well, that was wrong of them. Moses was just trying to defend his countrymen. So what happens? Moses flees. That actually is a sign of God's grace. Okay? Because Moses now was his reputation among his own people was destroyed, and his own people rejected him. So God gave Moses grace by removing him from that situation into Midian. And what did Moses receive in Midian? The blessing of a wife and children. Okay? Family. Right there is family. So again, here's another example where Moses is foreshadowing the coming Messiah. What happened with the Messiah? Was he rejected by his own countrymen?
Yes.
Yes. In fact, what did Herod try to do? Kill all the babies that were Jesus' age. Right? So there's, again, Moses was supposed to be killed. Jesus was supposed to be killed. Moses is foreshadowing that. Moses departed and went into exile into Midian. Where did Jesus have to flee to? Not himself, but his family. Joseph had to take him and flee into where?
Egypt.
The very place where this is taking place. So, and what was the problem with the, as Jesus became of age and began his ministry, what was one of the issues the Pharisees had with Jesus? That he made himself equal with God. You think you're judge and jury over us. You think you're higher than us. No, we're the ones who control Jewish culture. We, the Pharisees. How dare you go against our commands and rules? So, same thing is happening here. The Jews at that time knew Moses was a precursor of the coming Messiah. And here's another example of it. Stephen is highlighting these events in Jewish history that point to the coming Messiah. Okay? Everybody with me? Questions or comments about this? Fred?
Did the Jews understand what the Messiah was?
I mean, no.
Because the Messiahs are free to be with God.
Yeah.
And they're still looking for a ruler. So they already didn't understand.
Right. Jesus' own apostles, disciples, didn't understand. Until after the resurrection, frankly, after Pentecost, their minds were clouded. You know, Jesus was about to ascend into heaven, and what did they ask him? Is this the time now, Jesus, where you're going to restore the kingdom to Israel? And Jesus is going like, all of this, and you still don't get it.
Boy, they.
It's like they never understood what the Messiah was to be.
Right.
Ever.
Right. Now, some did. There were faithful in Israel, you know, that did recognize Jesus as the Messiah. The apostles eventually recognized Jesus as the Messiah and what that meant. Thank God we live in the New Testament era, where our eyes are opened, and it's very much clearer that Jesus is the Messiah, and what did that Messiah mean and do? Yes, it was very clouded back in the Old Testament. There was a lot of misunderstanding. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's go on a little bit. Okay, next paragraph. How are we doing on time? Linda, don't look at the clock.
Good idea.
All right, verse 30. Now when 40 years had passed, an angel appeared to him in the wilderness of Mount Sinai in a flame of fire in a bush. When Moses saw it, he was amazed at the sight. And as he drew near to look, there came the voice of the Lord. I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham and of Isaac and of Jacob. And Moses trembled and did not dare to look. Then the Lord said to him, take off your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their groaning, and I have come down to deliver them. And now come, I will send you to Egypt. So that's the story of Moses in the burning bush. I've got another side trip to take with you here, first of all, based on names. So first of all, there you see, I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob. That's how they referred to the true God from the time of Abraham to the time of Moses. What does Stephen skip over here? He just completely skips over Jesus giving Moses, God giving Moses a new name for himself. Moses says, who shall I say sent me? Tell them, I am that I am. Say that I am sent me. I am in Hebrew is very literally Yahweh. So that's not recounted here, is it?
Well, it says, I am the God of your fathers.
He does say that there. You're right. I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham and of Isaac and of Jacob. So that's kind of connecting the name for God between Abraham and Moses and the name for God from Moses till Jesus. Okay? I am. Now, another point I want to make here, this is all pointing to the coming Messiah. Another point I want to make here is this says, an angel appeared to him in the wilderness, in the flame of fire in a bush. That's not quite right. Okay? Let's go to Exodus chapter 3, where this event is first recounted for us. So we're going to go to Exodus chapter 3. Whoops, not example. Where did that come from? The word correct. There we go. So Exodus chapter 3, the burning bush. I'm just going to read the first couple of verses, and you'll see it right off the bat. Now Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. See, Moses' in-laws were also believers in the true God, even though they weren't part of the Hebrews. Like I said, from the time of Adam to the time of Abraham, there were pockets of true believers around the world that believed in the true God. Jethro was one of those. He was a priest of God in Midian. So Moses did marry a woman of faith. Okay? And he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God, a very significant mountain. And then what does verse 2 say? And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. He looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. Who appeared?
The angel of the Lord.
The angel of the Lord.
Yes,
see, some of you already know where I'm going with this. So if I say, here is an apple, that's the indefinite. Grammar lesson coming up, just warning for you. Grammar lesson, if you don't like grammar, you can fall asleep for about 5 minutes. Okay? If I say, here is an apple, a or an in the English language is an indefinite article. But if I say, here is the apple, that's a definite article. The is definite. What's the difference? The apple. Here is the apple.
Special.
It's a special apple, or a certain apple, or I'm referring to this particular apple and only this apple. The apple. For some reason. This is the apple I was telling you about, or whatever. But if I say this is an apple, or a apple, you know, obviously an apple. That means it's just one among many, right? One of our seminary professors, Dr. Geishan, who actually preached my ordination. Any of you who were here for my ordination back 15 years ago?
Yes.
Dr. Geishan was the preacher. One of my favorite professors. He wrote his dissertation on this right here, which he developed from other theologians as well. That in the Old Testament, there are many places where angels are mentioned. Every place where it says, the angel of the Lord, it is believed to be the pre-incarnate Christ. That it's Jesus before he took on human flesh, being born from the Virgin Mary. The angel of the Lord is a reference to the pre-incarnate Jesus. An angel of the Lord, when that's mentioned in the Old Testament, well, that's probably Michael or Gabriel or one of the other angels who's just delivering a message. And you can look at all of the occasions of angel being mentioned in the Old Testament. You can see. Sometimes it says an angel. Sometimes it says the angel. There is a definite article in the Hebrew language. And so you can, it's very definite, where sometimes it's indefinite, sometimes it's definite. So there's your little grammar lesson today. Okay? As I was talking about this, Andy Copey, one of our elders, he comes on Tuesday nights. He sits right there next to where Ann would sit. And he said, oh, it talks about this in the Lutheran Study Bible. I said, it does? Why do you even realize that? So if you have a Lutheran Study Bible, I'm going to end up reading to you a very short passage, a very short paragraph. On page 1227 in Jeremiah chapter 11, there's an insert article in the Lutheran Study Bible. It's called The Old Testament Names for God. And it lists about 24 Old Testament names for God. One of them is this, Angel of the Lord. The Hebrew, Malach Yahweh, that's Hebrew, means messenger of Yahweh, used 63 times. Generally, an angel is a created being who speaks for the Lord. But in many Old Testament settings, the angel of the Lord and the Lord are used interchangeably. This signals an appearance of God's Son before his incarnation. I have to wonder, because I know Dr. Geeshan did contribute to the study notes of the Lutheran Study Bible, I wonder if that note was written by Dr. Geeshan, who was one of my favorite professors. Anyway, so there's a little extra teaching for you, that when you see the angel of the Lord, that's the pre-incarnate Jesus, we believe. I'm not going to stake my theology as a pastor on that, because that's just kind of theological speculation, I suppose, really. Okay? Thoughts or questions about that? Little side note. Back to Acts chapter 7. So, I would tell you that down here where it says an angel, I would say that's a misalignment with what the Old Testament Hebrew says. Because the Old Testament there says the angel appeared in the bush. And here in the Greek, in Acts, it says an angel. So there's a translation issue there. Yeah, Bob?
Who determined the factor from that being an and the?
Well, both Greek and Hebrew, much like English, have an indefinite article and a definite article. The indefinite is by virtue of the absence of the definite article. So when you have the definite article, it would be translated as the in English. And when that's missing in either Hebrew or Greek, then it would be translated as a or an.
So someplace along the line, somebody...
Yes. Somebody goofed up the translation.
People?
Yes, people. Right. Those people. Boy, life would be perfect if it weren't for those people. Right?
I'm person.
Those people. That includes us. All right. So back where we were. When Moses saw it, he was amazed. I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Moses trembled and did not dare to look. The Lord said to him, take off the sandals from your feet, for the place you are standing is holy ground. I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their groaning. And I have come down to deliver them. And now come, I will send you to Egypt. Moses was the deliverer. Again, this is Jesus, we think, commissioning Moses to be the Redeemer. What is the same thing that happened from God the Father to God the Son? God the Father said to God the Son, go down there and rescue my people. They are suffering under sin and torment from the devil. So Moses is a precursor of Jesus being sent as our Redeemer. The Jews understood this. Okay? All right? I'm just going to get started on just a little bit of the next paragraph, and that's where we're going to end. Okay? Until, remember, 2 weeks from now. No class next week for Thanksgiving. All right, verse 35. This Moses, whom they rejected, saying, who made you a ruler and a judge? Yeah, Moses was rejected by his people. Was Jesus rejected by his people?
Yes.
Yeah. This man, Moses, God sent as both ruler and redeemer by the hand of the angel. There the translation's right. The angel, who appeared to him in the bush. This man led them out, performing wonders and signs in Egypt and at the Red Sea and in the wilderness for 40 years. This is the Moses who said to the Israelites, God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brothers. Yeah. Moses was not allowed to go in the Promised Land. Why?
He
sinned against God. He was disobedient, right?
He struck the rock
when he told the spoke to it.
Yeah.
Right. So Moses was forbidden from going into the Promised Land. And so as Moses knew he was about to die, God was going to take him home, and the people were all worried. Well, what about us? Moses, you've been our leader, you've been our prophet, you've been our spokesman for God. What about us? And what did Moses say? God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brothers. What's that a reference to?
Right.
The Messiah. Now, in the interim, Moses was also referring to all the prophets that would come. So God will keep sending you prophets to give you God's word and to lead you through life. But eventually, this will culminate in the final prophet, the Messiah, who will come. He will come from your brothers, from among you, and he will be a prophet like me. The Jews recognized this statement of Moses as being messianic, pointing to the coming Messiah. Okay? So again, here the point is, Stephen is hitting the highlights of Jewish history, pointing to the coming Messiah. Okay? And then just to look, just a preview, a glance at what's coming up here then. This is the one who was in the congregation in the wilderness with the angel who spoke to him at Mount Sinai and with our fathers. He received living oracles to give to us. Moses received living oracles. That would be the Ten Commandments. Living oracles. Our fathers refused to obey him, refused to obey Moses, and refused to obey Jesus, but thrust him aside and in their hearts turned to Egypt. Did the people grumble against Moses? Yes. And in their minds and in their hearts, they're like, why can't we go back to Egypt? Back there we had melons and leeks and food and meat and all kinds of things. Did the Jews at the time of Jesus reject him?
Yes.
Saying to Aaron, make for us gods who will go before us. As for this Moses who led us out from the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. Did the people become impatient waiting for Moses? Yes. Did the people become impatient waiting for the Messiah and craft a Messiah in their own image according to the way they wanted him to be?
Sure.
Yeah. You see the parallels here? This is all going right directly towards Jesus. They made a calf in those days and offered a sacrifice to the idol and were rejoicing in the works of their hands. Oh, Aaron, you're the brother of Moses.
Yeah.
And your brother has gone up on the mountain for 40 days and the people get impatient and so they say, Aaron, make for us another god that we can worship because we don't know what happened to Moses. Well, Aaron should have known better.
Yes.
He should have said no.
I wonder why the Lord didn't just strike Aaron dead.
Well, yeah, and then so Aaron said, oh, okay, give me your gold, I'll make you a golden calf, and then we'll worship that. What's that? How stupid. But that's what happened with the Jewish leaders at the time of Jesus. They crafted their own idol, a Messiah in the image of the way they wanted him to be. Okay? But God turned away and gave them over to worship the host of heaven, as it is written in the book of the prophets. Oh, and then it goes on here. That's getting much more complicated. I'm going to get into that next week, because we're just over an hour.
I mean 2 weeks.
Yes, thank you, Bob. Thank you. Okay, so you see where this is going. I've kind of pointed it out and given you outlines. This is all pointing Jewish history towards the coming Messiah. And then at the end, Stephen is going to say, and this Messiah is Jesus. He doesn't use those words, but that's what he says. And then they get all mad. And what do? They stone him. The first martyr, we think. So, that's what's coming in 2 weeks. Alright? Questions or comments? Wow. Okay.
You're such a good teacher.
Yeah, alright. If you say so, I'm not sure. Alright, well, let's rise and close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thanks for coming. Have a good day, and happy Thanksgiving to everyone.